going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome into the Lineup Logic Podcast, the daily fantasy podcast bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come on FanDuel. I'm your host, Sean Kane, and Kyle Schwarber hit a home run off of a changeup. Somebody tweeted at me last night and was like, well, I know how you're going to start the podcast with a little Schwarber gift there. Listen, my response was, even Edison Volquez can throw a no-no. You get lucky, man. You know what? I was lucky as hell. It was fun. It's kind of fun to make that kind of a call, you know, and try and stand behind your call. I'm not going to take a victory lap over it because, you know, what are the chances that that actually comes through? But it was nice to have that Schwarber home run. The Cubs stack was excellent. It looked like the Arizona stack was going in the right direction. And what do they do? Two runs in the first inning. I was like, yep, here it goes. Let's go. Jordan Zimmermann, not that good. Well, you know, Zimmermann calmed everything down and really did some damage there, and went six innings. I don't know. Let's take a second before we jump into tonight. Let's take a second and review yesterday's lineup. One of these nights. So one of the things that we have to note about Zimmermann is that, it was interesting. He apparently, and I heard this via the Number Fire podcast and host over there, Jim Sonis, always worth a listen there. He mentioned that Zimmermann actually has added a pitch because he had that great start, and Sonis looked into it and he was like, well, he added a two-seamer. His four-seamer is getting blown up, so he switched it to a two-seamer. Result is more ground balls, which we were all over Goldschmidt because of his terrible four-seamer. Well, he was throwing the two-seamer instead, and the result is ground balls. And all of a sudden, he's changed the way he's throwing his fastball, and it's just completely changed. The home runs have turned into ground balls. It's certainly interesting to see. And it was disappointing on our end because... The reality was it looked like they were really headed in the right direction. But what are you going to do? You know, what are you going to do? I had a mixed bag. My Kluber lineups did great. And obviously Pineda was absolutely an abomination. Only finished with 9 fantasy points, but he was owned at 30%. So all he had to do was be on somebody else. I knew he was going to be owned highly. And, you know, you can't be all in on a pitcher that's that volatile like Michael Pineda. You know, the Arizona was disappointing. Texas was disappointing. It was one of those days where, for me, it was about going back to, I think, being a day early or being a day late on a team is a really frustrating exercise, right? I was a day early on Houston. I was all in on them against Nick Martinez. They put up 2 runs. They put up 13 last night against Andrew Cashner. That's frustrating, okay? The day before, I was all in on the Twins. Missed them by a day. They put up 20 runs. I missed the day that they put on 20 runs. Same with the Red Sox. I did that the other night with the Red Sox. So last night, I went back to Twins. I went back to Red Sox. Those were the lines that performed for me. Those are the lines, you know, and I think the point being is not necessarily that, it's not necessarily that, you know, you're always right. Or that you're going to be able to always get it right. But that if you know a team is capable of performing, even if they burn you, you can't necessarily go away from them. The numbers are the numbers for a reason. Okay, Houston is the best team against right-hand pitching in the league for a reason. Okay, there are things that you have to continue to trust in your process. And you know, the Cubs was exactly that. Matt Harvey is not good. He's got some below average pitches, the Cubs seem to be waking up a little bit. Now, Chris Bryant's performance was intensely disappointing, but, you know, Ian Happ, Kyle Schwarber, John Jay, even at min price, almost min price with 12 points was really nice. And then the Twins, you know, we knew Sam Gaviglio, the only thing that he was going to do was give up a home run. The Twins only put up 4 runs, but they gave up 2 home runs. So, you know, I had a little 3-man twin stack of Sano, Escobar, and Kepler. Now, Kepler was a big disappointment, but I got 2 home runs out of it. It was one of those nights that, you know, you either had the Boston stack because they were super productive, or the Cubs homers, right? Or you had these kind of random pieces of power in your lineup because the Houston stack was also productive, but they weren't very highly owned, interestingly enough. I didn't see them atop a lot of leaderboards, but people did have them. They did have pieces and parts of it. You know, if you had Kluber and you had Mookie, you were pretty much on track. Pretty much everything that I'm seeing in the top here was Kluber and Mookie. In that, so you know, it was an interesting night for sure. It was a complicated night, but I think that, you know, the idea of like getting burned by a team and then not going back to them, or you know, bouncing between being ahead a day early or a day late, you have to be consistent in understanding who you're going to go with and why you're going to go with them on a regular basis. So we're sticking with the offenses that we trust, that we know. We're sticking with the process over results. You know, it wasn't a terrible night as far as results. Still just about broke even. So Pineda done anything, it would have been really useful. But he didn't. So that's it. That's enough reflecting. Let's move forward to Thursday's slate. You know, early slate is interesting, but we're going to just jump into the main slate here where we have 7 baseball games to talk about. So let's go ahead and jump into the main slate. All right, first game of the night, Red Sox, Phillies, 8.5 runs projected here, wind blowing out in Citizens Bank. Chris Sale versus Nick Pivetta, and Chris Sale is the heaviest favorite on the slate. Of course he is. That makes perfect sense. Interestingly enough, my sister lives in Philly, going to this game. She's going to the game with my folks. They're in town visiting, so they're going to the Phils Red Sox game, so that should be good juju, hopefully, for us here. I told him, I was like, you guys are going to get to see Chris Sale pitch. Not going to be a lot of bats going on there. Phillies fans aren't going to be particularly happy. My mother was like, who is that? I have no idea. I was like, that's fine, Mom. It's fine. You don't have, he's a great pitcher. It'll be fun. You guys have fun. Go ahead. Have fun. So Chris Sale going up against Nick Pivetta. I mean, give me a break. Phillies, terrible offense. You're better against lefties, sure. They have a little bit of power against lefties. But this is a good spot for Chris Sale, for sure. We'll talk about it. There are some complications to it. It's not absolute perfection, but it certainly is interesting. Nats versus the Mets. This is an important series for the Mets. 8.5 runs projected here, and this is a pick'em, more or less. Gio Gonzalez versus Robert Gsellman. You know, and Vegas knows what they're saying here. Interestingly enough, New York has cooled down a little bit. It's only 70 degrees there, but the wind is blowing straight out to left field. So give a little bit of bump to your right-handed bats. And if you want right-handers, you're looking at the Mets right-handers. And the Mets right-handers, man, really did good work last night. It was a really, really respectable turnout that they had against the Cubs. They strung together some late runs and ended up, you know, throwing the ball out of the ballpark. That's what the Mets do, man. They have to hit home runs for that offense to work. So they did. And it's interesting, this Lagares, Flores, Cespedes, hey, interesting against Gio. But Gio has also been pitching very well lately. So we'll see. Tampa Bay in Detroit. This one has really ugly rain chances in it. 82 degrees of the wind blowing in. But up until pitch, through 6 o'clock, 75% chance of rain. So certainly not a nice day in Detroit, unfortunately. But it's a nice game. 9.5 run total here. Alex Cobb versus Justin Verlander. God, if this game goes, it's one of my favorite games. I'm certainly going to have some shares of it. These two pitchers, you know, Verlander just not quite what he used to be in his last couple starts. You can see it. He's not really racking up the Ks. He's getting hit too hard. And Alex Cobb is a gas can. Brewers Cards, 9 runs projected here. This is a nice day for baseball. 90 degrees in St. Louis. Gotta love that. No serious wind, 4 miles per hour out there. 9 total in St. Louis. These two teams put up 13 total runs last night. Competitive game. They're very similar teams. Power at first and third. Top of the lineup is pretty good. Bottom of the lineup, you know, you kind of take what you can get. And 1 through 4, I think, are in play here, to be completely honest with you. Zach Davies versus Michael Wacha. It's the lefties. You got lefties in both spots. It should be. I think you probably see a very similar score to what you saw yesterday. 6-6, 6-7. The only thing about Davies and Wacha is the ground ball rates. They just kind of, you know, take the life out of the ball. So that's complicated. 11 runs projected in Coors. We got to talk about Coors tonight because Matt Moore versus Jeff Hoffman. It'll be 86 degrees in Colorado. Whew. And if the ball wasn't flying earlier this year when it was 65 and wet, this is when Coors Field really becomes Coors Field. When it's 85 fucking degrees out there, 90 degrees, and it's that air is so thin. So you're going to have some shares of Coors. But I'm going to tell you right now, my shares are not coming from the San Francisco side, and we'll talk about why. New York versus Oakland, 8.5 runs projected as Jordan Montgomery goes up against my man Sonny Gray. I love Sonny Gray. I love Jordan Montgomery. I wish I could start both of these pitchers. That said, wind is blowing out at Oakland. The wind in Oakland isn't that much of a thing, but it is a big ballpark, and it really is only 70 degrees out there. However, both of these pitchers are pretty good. It's actually, I would love to see this one become a pitcher's duel. And Vegas is showing some respect for both of them by keeping this total relatively low. I think that this is the kind of like, let's see what happens total from Vegas at 8.5 runs. It was like, they're both good, but Montgomery favored by just a hair, which makes sense because the Yankees are so good against right-handed pitching. Royals Angels, 8.5 runs projected here, and the Angels are favored, strangely enough. Well, I guess not strangely enough. I guess that's fair, but you know, Ricky Nolasco he's got a high K rate, but he also gives up so many home runs. And you know what? The Royals, I'm going to talk about the Royals because the Royals they're not getting a lot of respect. They're getting no respect. It's very true, man. This offense is improving for sure. And I think that, you know, we kind of have to acknowledge that they're not the same whipping boy that they were earlier this season. They're not the same whipping boy that they were earlier this season. So the Royals are I think in a decent spot against Nolasco for sure. He is not a great pitcher. And the Royals right now, guess what? Last 2 weeks, 35% hard hit rate, directly behind the New York Yankees. This team is not bad. If you look at the way that they played in that San Francisco series, you would affirm that. And you look at the way that they played in that San Diego series, it would affirm that as well. They're figuring it out. They're getting the ball up. They're hitting it hard. It's leaving the ballpark on, you know, the bats of Bonifacio and Moustakas. We're going to talk about them. They're an interesting spot for me, I think. You know, we want to be ahead of the curve on knowing that the Royals aren't this terrible, and they aren't. They aren't that terrible. They're an interesting team to watch right now. I mean, they're a terrible baseball team, like, in general. I think they're going to really struggle for the rest of the year, but they're going to have some fantasy value here for a little while we can, you know, possibly use them as leverage. So that's it, man. 7 games. There's some really obvious, clear spots. The pitching is kind of hard to decipher. And I have just buried my head in a lot of stuff here, which is continuously taking me a long time every morning, just analyzing everything about all these pitchers. So let's talk about it. Let's figure out who we love in this matchup, these matchups. Who do you love? All right, it's not, I'm like, I don't need to beat a dead horse, but it's Chris Sale. Okay, obviously he's gonna be your chalkiest, your most highly owned pitcher. He should be owned massively. I'll give you the reasoning. 35% strikeout rate, 16% swinging strike rate, 4.8% walk rate, XFIP, Sierra, both 2.5. Elite, elite, elite. He's the best pitcher in baseball. Don't care what you're saying. Best pitcher in baseball, period. Okay. Phils are better against left-handed pitching than they are against right-handed pitching. Very true. They have better righties, no question. And my Tommy Joseph home run almost came true last night. He barreled the shit out of a double into the wall. But anyway, they still only have a 268 wOBA and a 62 WRC plus in the last 30 days against lefties. So they're really not that productive, but they do have some pop. They do have some power. They also only hit the ball at a 26% hard contact rate. Here's the bad part. They only have an 18% strikeout rate against left-handed pitching. Who would have thought that this team, this Phillies team that we have been picking on all year, but in the last 30 days, the Phils, even though they're not hitting anything, they only have an 18% strikeout rate against left-handed pitching. And let's see how that grades out as far as, you know, leaders here. They're in the category with, like, you know, we don't strike out teams like St. Louis, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and if that's the comp, right? Cleveland is the comp here. And the reason that Cleveland is the comp is because Cleveland is a subpar offense against lefties. Check. All right. The other thing is that we just saw Cleveland go up against an elite strikeout pitcher in Kershaw. Got the win, no damage, two runs, but he didn't get the K's. And I think that irritates me, because I want the swinging at 25% of pitches. Like, I want the 25% K rate Philadelphia Phillies. I don't want the 18% Philadelphia Phillies. And that's obnoxious to me. It's bothering me. I don't know how to get over it. I think the thing is that, well, and you add to that, they're not swinging, right? Okay, fine, they're not swinging. He has a bad umpire. He's got, like, this is his ump grade is like a -1. So, you know, he's not going to get the corners. He's not going to get those freebies where he's going to be slightly outside the zone and guys are just sitting saying, strike me out. And that's the thing against these high K pitchers. A lot of teams will just sit on their heels and not swing, you know, and Texas did it to Chris Sale last time. Cleveland did it to Kershaw, and they basically let the umpire decide, right? When you have these elite pitchers that you know you're not going to necessarily be able to hit, because even if you make contact, you know, you're going to be more prone to be like, I'll just let the umpire decide. And if he starts throwing balls, then I know I can, you know, possibly get a walk. If he, you know, it has to throw, you know, if he gets behind in the count and he's got to pound the zone, then I might get a pitch that I like. That's the annoying part. That's really the annoying part here. So I loved Sale and Cash. He's going to be so highly owned there that it works. That fading Sale just really won't even hurt. It won't help you or hurt you there. In GPPs, it's going to work because I think people are going to suffer from what I am suffering from. They're going to overthink it, and they're going to fade him for bats because, frankly, it's really hard to pay for Chris Sale and get bats that you like here on this slate. So it works in both, and I'm going to have plenty of Chris Sale. I just think there are some caveats here that I want us to be aware of. This isn't a 65-point game for Chris Sale, okay? This is more like a 40-pointer. But I don't think the Phillies are going to score. I'll say that. And he's going to get the win against Nick Pivetta. So I'll say that. That's a good thing. If you're pivoting, I think the two most popular options for pivots, with good reason, are going to be Gio and Jordan Montgomery. And let's talk about Jordan Montgomery here against Oakland. He deserves some attention. Oakland has a 25% K rate against left-handed pitching on the season, but that's gone up to 29% in the last 30 days. They're only walking 7.9% of the time, which is kind of what Monty has to avoid. His xFIP is elevated, his SERA is elevated, and it's partially because he puts balls in play. 23% strikeout rate, 12% swinging strike rate, which is basically because he has some filthy K pitches. His slider, his curve, and his change, all grayed out above average. They're excellent. His fastball is not that great, and that's the one that's getting hit for, hit for basically elevating his BABIP. And his xFIP and SERA as a result are 4-4 and 4-2. The annoying thing, you look at the pitch profile, there's some guys who can hit those K pitches, the change in the curve specifically, Pinder and Lowry. And then, you know, you go down to Chris Davis. Chris Davis can hit the fastball. And then you look at Ryan Healy. Those are the righties that you worry about, right? You know, Pinder, Lowry, Davis, and Healy. And they all have a pitch that Montgomery throws that they like. So it's kind of like, you know. The nice thing is that this offense isn't been particularly potent lately, you know, against lefties. You know, like I said, they have one of the highest strikeout rates in the league, and they only have an WRC plus in the last 30 days of 85, the 292 WOBA. You know, the thing that you have to remember is they do hit the ball decently hard, 31% hard hit rate, which, you know, is right dead middle of the pack. You know, same as Cleveland or Houston or Boston against lefties, LA even against lefties. So, you know, it's not a perfect situation for Montgomery. I think one of the things that I'm cautious about with Montgomery is the fact that he can get pulled early. They've let him go, you know, deep into a couple games, but not all those games. So it certainly is a spot that we want to be cautious about here with Montgomery, but I think that he will attract attention. He's cheap. He has massive K upside. He should get run support in this big ballpark. So I think there's Monty. Monty is in play. Gio will also get attention. And I'm on the fence about Gio. You know, the Mets left-handers have been terrible recently. And that left-hand heavy lineup really, really, really struggles against left-handed pitching. Okay? The one without Cespedes. And it's like they're starting Bruce and Conforto even against lefties when they didn't have, when everybody was injured and all that. They had a 25% K rate, a 6% walk rate. Here's the thing. That's not the same lineup that you're going to see. You're going to see the lineup that you saw last night. And, you know, they put at the top, they put Lagares, Walker, Flores. Those are three righties who can smash, specifically Flores. And I'm going to guess that Cespedes is in there too. He's got a 330 WOBA this season against against left-handed pitching. Gio's been pitching really well, 22% K rates, 9% swinging strike rate, 46% ground ball rate, only allowing 21% hard contact. Previous start against the Mets, he went out six innings, got the quality start, you know, pitched really well. I think he was like 5 Ks or something like that. You know, it's really nice to see his batted ball data has been excellent. His last 15 days in StatCast data, 176-foot batted ball distance on average and a 60% ground ball rate. It's been way up. And the last two starts, that's filthy. I mean, that's slate high basically for the last two weeks, last two starts. He's gotten the walks down. He's not walking guys in his last three games. He hasn't had a lot of walks. And in Texas, his last start, he had 9 Ks and only allowed one run. That's a good sign. That's with the Gio that you want. That's good Gio. That's not bad Gio. But bad Gio can show up against this team. And here's why bad Gio can show up. Look at the BVP. It's really ugly. Lagares, Reyes, Cespedes all smash him and smashed him last year. Multiple home runs for both of these, all of these guys across a couple games last year. You know, it's a spot that I think we could end up getting bad Geo back. And if you look at his game logs, there have been two starts this year where he has gotten absolutely exploded. And that's in the cards. That said, depending on the lineup, if you get no Cespedes or no Neil Walker, or they have to have Conforto and Bruce in the top of the lineup, or they have to push, you know, something like that. If it, Wilmer Flores is, somebody was day to day, I forget on the Mets who it is, but somebody was day to day. You know, if you get those lefties for the Mets, and I think you fire it up for sure. Conforto's, Neil Walker's day to day. Yeah, that's it. That's it. So yeah, I mean, you're going to get Cespedes, you're going to get Wilmer Flores in there, and that's actually not a bad play. I think you know that people are going to look at Gio Gonzalez tonight because he's, you know, in a seemingly good situation. Now, there's three pitchers that I really like, but they're just, you can't play them. I mean, you could if you really want, If you really want leverage, these are the three guys. Trevor Hoffman, Sonny Gray, and Robert Salmon. Okay, let me talk about Hoffman first because Jeff Hoffman. Hoffman is a fucking animal. This guy is the only pitcher on the slate who grades out anywhere close to Chris Sale. I'm not misspeaking there, and I'm not looking at something wrong. He's had four starts this year. He has been filthy. Look at the game logs. 33% strikeout rate, 13% swinging strike rate. He has a better walk rate and a better BABIP than Chris Sale this year, and a better whip. XFIP of 3.1, 2.7 Sierra. He has three games in a row where he has gone 50 FanDuel points, one of which was in Wrigley Field against the Cubs. Matchup with San Francisco is unbelievable. They're terrible. 28% hard contact rate against right-handed pitching in the last 30 days. They're one of the worst offenses in baseball. They have been all year. It's not changing. They're not trending in any good or bad, any good direction recently. The problem is Coors. How can you start a pitcher in Coors? Okay, he's only pitched one start in Coors. Three of his other starts were on the road. It was against the Dodgers, and he gave up a home run. Three runs and 5.2 innings pitched. That's obnoxious because that's just not going to get it done. You can't start that. The issue that I really see with Hoffman here, besides the fact that he's just pure filth right now, the issue is the curveball. It's one of his favorite K pitches. He uses it about 20% of the time, just below 20% of the time on the road. A pitch isn't going to break in Coors. It's not going to break. He uses his change. He uses his slider. But that curve is a K pitch. It's just not going to break. And you can't start even a Clayton Kershaw, an elite K pitcher, an elite strikeout curveball guy. You can't start him in Coors. God, I love this spot. Here's the thing. If you want to get really risky with Hoffman and basically be the only person who plays him because you believe and trust the numbers and you hate the San Francisco Giants, do this. Put the three best Rockies bats in there behind him. Get Hoffman and then go Blackman, Arenado, and Ian Desmond. And we're going to talk about Ian Desmond. Or, you know, however you want to do it. But put a Rockies stack with him. And the idea being that if he pitches really well and the Rockies hit Matt Moore, which they will, then you get that kind of support, right? You get that support. Maybe you throw some of the better San Francisco bats in another lineup in case he gets blown up. I'm not sure. That would be how I would do it, because maybe you get him into the sixth inning, he gets the quality start, and if those bats are hitting, then he could get the win, and you kind of have that Rockies group together. So there's a lot of situations in which I like pairing my pitcher in my stack, because I know that if those bats start to do what they're supposed to do, then they're going to support that pitcher and get him the win, and he's probably going to be able to get into the quality start, and it changes how much leverage he has in a game and how he can pound the straight. You know what I mean. You guys are baseball people. The other guy, Sonny Gray, man, I love Sonny Gray. Want to play him, but I just every time I just can't do it. He's got the Yankees at home, 23% strikeout rate, 11% swinging strike rate. He has the slate high season ground ball rate of 56%. He's got a 2.3-1 ground ball to fly ball ratio. The issue is the New York Yankees, who are the best team in baseball against right-handed pitching. You just can't. I don't know that you can start a righty against the Yankees. They don't strike out enough. They had a 20% strikeout rate. Season-long WRC plus above 120. Way too much hard contact on this team for you to feel comfortable starting Sonny Gray. We got to know that this guy has 10K upside. He does. He has 10K potential in a lot of his starts. So keep your eyes on Sonny Gray. Hope he could have a nice start, but I just don't think you're going to be able to do it against the Yankees unless late slate ultimate leverage play. Robert Gsellman is also quietly getting a lot better, and Vegas reflected that in their line by only giving the Nats 4.2 runs in this one. He's got some stuff, man. His last three starts, he's gotten wins. Since his San Diego start, he has four starts and only six earned runs. You know, he's not really a K pitcher. He's got four Ks, but he's gone about six innings in all those, and he's only given up a run or two. Only, I think, one home run through those three starts. He's been really good. Thing is the Nats only have an 18% strikeout rate against right-handers. They're top 10 offense. We know that they have the lefties that can, throw Gsellman off. A couple of those starts were against teams that are good, but not nearly as good as the Nationals. So, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is Hoffman, Gray, and Gsellman are pitchers whose stock is rising, and we need to keep our eyes on them. And when the situation arises, guys, we need to be aware that these guys are pitching extremely well. It's very difficult to love them in this situation, but I think that, we need to keep our eyes on these guys. And I think of all of them, I think the most Hoffman is in the best spot. And it's not because I think that the thing is if you can't hit the baseball, if San Francisco can't hit the baseball, then it doesn't matter that they're in Coors Field. And San Francisco fucking sucks. So Hoffman, I think, would be the one if you really, really, because there's just too much risk against these offenses in the Nationals and the Yankees in ballparks that, are basically neutral. Oh, well, that's not true. City Field and O's Coliseum or A's Coliseum. I don't know. It's the O Coliseum or the A Coliseum. I forget. Are a little bit more favored to pitchers. But anyway. All right. Speaking of Coors, we got to talk about Coors here. Let's talk about Coors. No,
that's not Coors.
Hoffman is not to be touched. I'm not stacking San Francisco bats against Hoffman. He could have a great game. I don't care what you say. I'm not doing it. Matt Moore, however, is so bad that I would stack the Rockies against him if they were at AT&T Park. The best ballpark versus the worst ballpark, I would definitely stack the Rockies in AT&T against Matt Moore. He is so bad. And this is Coors. He has a terrible fastball. He has a terrible cutter. He has a terrible curve. They're all grading out below average. His, excuse me, I'm going to pull up the numbers on Matt Moore. Here we go. Sorry, I had him up. And 17% strikeout rate, 8% swinging strike rate. XWHIP in Sierra, 5.2, 501. It's the, as a lefty, the righties are just smashing him. He has an XFIP of 6.78 against lefties, though. Hard contact is 50% against lefties, so please do not forget Charlie Blackmon here. Please do not. His home run fly ball ratio is 20%. It is a terrible, terrible spot for Matt Moore. He is a really bad, really bad pitcher. So Arenado and Blackmon, elite plays. Obviously, these are the best pieces of power in the Rockies lineup. Team leaders in ISO, we know they're going to get it done here. Story and LeMahieu are two of the best righties on the team, actually. And I have no problem with them. They're actually pretty inexpensive. However, one of my favorites is Ian Desmond. And Ian Desmond profiles extremely well here. He loves the cutter. He loves the curveball. And those are two of Moore's worst pitches. And Desmond certainly hits lefties better than he hits righties. So I love Ian Desmond. The one, and he's from Sarasota, where I grew up. Same town as Scooter Gennett. Scooter Gennett effect. It's the Gennett effect. One other person that I want to talk about is Cargo. And the reason that I'm going to talk about Cargo is because Cargo is slumping. He's a lefty. He is, I believe he's pretty cheap. Let me see what his price is. He's $3,400. He's about the same price as Ian Desmond. Okay. So Desmond is 38. So he's $3,400. That's not a great price, but it's not a terrible price. And knowing what we know about the reverse splits that Matt Moore has, I think that he is like one of the biggest leverage plays here, but he's not my favorite play. Let's be very clear. Arenado and Story are my favorite play, but Arenado and Blackman are my favorites. 46 and 5,100. I mean, how many of those fuckers can you afford? You can't. Trevor Story is 4,000. That's not bad. You could do that. DJ LeMahieu, 3,400. So if you want like that value stack, I think it's LeMahieu, maybe Reynolds at 4K, though he hasn't been hitting very well recently. I think it's LeMahieu, it's Story and Desmond, or just maybe LeMahieu and Desmond. They're both below 4K and they profile well here. I like them in this spot. And they should be in the top six, hopefully in the top six of this order. If they're not, then that's a problem. But we'll see. All right. So Coors, that's Coors. That's what I'm doing with Coors. Give me some Rockies, and I'm definitely going to have some Rockies. I'm going to take some chances on some pitchers, and with those chances, I'm definitely going to have Rockies in there to try and get some run support. But if you're not going to them, I love the Red Sox here. They're clicking. They've been destroying the Philadelphia pitching staff, just moving the base paths. We know that they're a very efficient offense, and poor Nick Pivetta gives up a 428 whoop. 428 wOBA to right-handed bats, guys. 375 to left-handers, so he's a little bit better against the lefties. Don't worry. Oh, God. You know, 36% hard contact rate for this team. It's not showing up in their barrel rate or anything like that, or the advanced numbers like ISO. They don't send it out of the park that often, but God, they're productive when they get going. You know, Mookie and Xander got it going last night. You know, Mookie just feeling it. Four hits, two dingers. He is demoralizing. He is going to hit a double, run the base pass. He's going to hit a double. He's going to run the base. And then somebody's going to knock him in just enough to knock him in. And, you know, Xander had a couple of those, certainly had a nice game. Moreland and Benintendi have the best ISO grades against right-handed pitching. Moreland had a toe yesterday. He sat out. Fucking my luck with Mitch Moreland, man. I have been on Moreland so often. Last night, I was in love with him. I was in love with him the other night, a Monday night. And then he dingered on Tuesday night. I'm going back to Mitchie because it was just that he got hit by a pitch. So they let him sit. So hopefully he'll be able to, you know, man up today and play against Nick Pivetta. I mean, because he can hit the change. Okay, and that's what you want against Nick Pivetta. You want fastball, changeup pitchers. Those are his weak pitches. So I am all in on Mitch, Mookie, Xander, Benintendi as a four-man. I think if you want to go with Jackie Bradley, he got it going last night, barreled up two doubles. So I think Jackie Bradley is interesting. But remember, I mean, Benintendi is cheaper than Jackie. So I like Jackie though. I like him a lot. I just don't know. He doesn't profile that well against this pitch type. He likes like the junky splitters. Like we hit Jackie Bradley against Tanaka. That's when we do it. So the Red Sox are certainly in play. They're not inexpensive, but I think if people are paying down, they're probably going to be paying down for, you know, and paying up for Coors, or paying down for pitching and pay up for Coors, because it's a really good spot for Coors. The game that I really like here is the Grout section, you know, some kind of middle of the road costs. We just have to worry about the weather. The weather's really bad, and this game could get called, no question. Tigers Rays, though, really, really is appealing to me. Alex Cobb has the second highest home run per nine on the slate. Guess who has the highest home run per nine? Ricky Nolasco. 396 wOBA to left-handed bats. There's no left-handers on the Tigers, except for Alex Avila. 336 to right-handed bats. He is the worst batted ball distance on the slate of 253 feet. 46% hard contact, 46% fly ball rate. The guy is a certified gas can. Strikeout rate is 18%. He's not good. Obviously, I want Avila against the, you know, lefties. He's a lefty that I want. He can hit the fastball, and the ball goes far when Alex Avila hits it. JD and Upton. That's about it, though. Honestly, they can all hit his curveball, which is not, you know, it's not a great pitch, but it's not a terrible pitch. What I was really, really looking for when I was looking at this Detroit lineup and how they hit the ball, I need a changeup pitcher. And there's not a real serious changeup pitcher on this team, unfortunately. There's some serious power against the curveball and, you know, and stuff like that, but it's not, that is not the pitch that we want to go up against with Cobb. In fact, I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, it's the change, man. His curve is actually pretty good. It's the change that's brutal. God, if we had a change, when the Mets play Alex Cobb, start all the Mets lefties against Alex Cobb because they all smash the changeup. The Tigers just don't hit the changeup. They hit the curve, you know, JD and Upton both hit the curve, but they don't love the changeup. So I'm going to just stick to the sheer power guys, the guys that can get over on the fastball, and that's Avila, JD, and Upton. You know, and then the thing that you really like is the Detroit bullpen is really, or excuse me, the Detroit bullpen is bad, but the Rays bullpen is bad too. So that's always good as well. Then I think we got to look on the opposite side at Justin Verlander. I mean, he's the second highest batted ball distance on the slate right behind Cobb. And then he's got the highest hard contact rate allowed on the slate. His wOBA, interestingly enough, the right and left-handed bats is definitely depressed. It's below 300. I mean, it's just overwhelming fastball. He still has it. That fastball is still filthy. You know, the thing is he's just given up way too much power on his other pitches. You know, the Rays are right behind the Yankees in WRC plus and a hard hit rate against right-handed pitching. And it's beginning to become a situation where the Rays are the... There are a couple teams that are showing themselves where you can only play them against certain handedness. White Sox against lefties, the Rays against righties. Although the White Sox are trending in the right direction against righties, by the way. Kind of fun to keep our eye on that. They did some work against Dylan Bundy last night. That game was annoying. Another game that I was a day late on. So it's the lefties here for me. Dickerson, Morrison, Rasmus, three left-handed bat. They can all hit the fastball. They can hit the changeup. I think it's a good leverage spot. You know, that said, Verlander has good BVP against these guys. He could, you know, for whatever reason, put it together and have a really high quality start. The Rays are hitting the ball. They hit the ball hard. Their advanced numbers suggest that they will probably strike out a ton and hit the ball a ton as well. So interesting spot to go to the Rays. I don't think they're a must have. If your process says, that's okay. I'm fine with not stacking the Rays or not having any Rays bats. That's fine. One thing I will say is that Malik Smith is the leadoff bat at 2,200. He's going to be a great value today. He's a lefty, and he's been batting leadoff for the Rays against righties. He'll probably bat leadoff today. Kid has a lot of stolen base upside, so all we need to do is get him on base. And, you know, if he gets at bats on the road against that bullpen too, he could have a nice little spot to go there. So he's a nice source of salary relief if you need him at leadoff at 2,200. Now, a couple pivot spots. One game that I really like, I do think that a lot of people will be on it. St. Louis, Milwaukee, these guys, they continue to just kind of put up these, you know, 6-7 run games, you know, 12 to 15 runs. It's good. There's good fantasy value in those types of games. Teams are going back and forth, two home runs, you know, and a little bit of, you know, just good scoring. And the 92 degrees in St. Louis, I love that. It's a slate high temperature. You know, Milwaukee is pitching Davies, the righty here. So we can certainly go with the classic characters that we do in St. Louis against righties, Fowler and Yurko and Carpenter. I think Fowler and Yurko might be my favorite because they profile really well against the changeup. They love the changeup. And Fowler and Yurko both love hitting the changeup. So that's Davies' worst pitch. You know, he's struggled. He does have a pretty high ground ball rate. That's the one thing I will say that, you know, Davies has in his favor. You know, he's not a good pitcher by any means. His K rate is, you know, 16%. His walk rate is 9%. But a 50% ground ball rate, you know, and only 30% hard contact. You know, you're kind of relying on the fact that he's gonna kind of just get batted around the, you know, and BABIPed around here, and really just kind of slowly but surely picked apart, you know. And his numbers, his WOBA is, yeah, it's bad. It's 359 to lefties and 364 to righties. It's no good. That's no good. In fact, against lefties, he's really struggled. XFIP goes up above 5. You know, it just, there's not a ton of hard contact here. But I certainly think that the classic Carpenter, Fowler, Yurko stack is in play. Those are the guys who could hit him in this spot. And in fact, I believe Carpenter already hit a home run off of him once this year. Almeidas Diaz did, but he's really cooled off quite a bit. You know, Davies in his last couple games, he's given up. He basically will go 5 to 6 innings and give up 3 earned runs. That's kind of exactly what you're going to get. You're not going to get, you know, four, five hits. He's not a total gas can, but you do hope you get to that Milwaukee bullpen and the score kind of slowly rises here. I think on the opposite side against Michael Wacha, you know, you have another spot here where you have a pitcher that's, you know, not great, Bob. He's fine for what he is, you know. I mean, 21% strikeout rate, 9+% walk rate, XFIP and Sierra both above 4. You know, the thing about Wacha is that he's really limiting the hard contact. He really is. He's really limiting the hard contact. You know, he doesn't really have problems with splits. I mean, you know, his WOBA to lefties is elevated and his XFIP to lefties is elevated. So I think it's Thames and Shaw, because, you know, you have two power lefties against a guy who struggles with lefties, and he has a bad changeup. And Sean Thames profile really well against the changeup. And so I think, you know, if you want Shaw Thames as a pair, that's about it. Maybe Sogard, because, you know, he's a leadoff batter and he just gets on base. That's what he does. No power, but he gets on base. So Shaw and Thames are interesting. I think, you know, first and third, though, are you going to play Shaw and Thames? Are you going to play Yurko and Carpenter? I don't know. I can't really say one is a better choice than the other, really, to be completely honest with you. I guess, you know, the outcome possibilities are very, very similar, I think. You know, if the tiebreaker is, let's say, for example, barrel rate, it's going to be Davies. He's just more likely to get barreled up there and more likely to not strike anybody out. So you'd go with St. Louis at home here in that situation. That's the tiebreaker, I guess. St. Louis maybe gets a little bit of bump there. And Vegas, I think, likes St. Louis more. I think the one spot that's very sneaky to me is the Royals, and I talked about them. Nolasco has the highest home run fly ball ratio on the slate. I really don't believe in this Angels rotation, and I don't know why. But I just, you know, they to me are there's problems here. You know, he's got a 19% strikeout rate. Fine. He's only got a 5% walk rate, but he's giving up more fly balls than ground balls. He's giving up 38% hard contact, 20% home run to fly ball ratio, xFIP above 4. If I'm not mistaken, he's like given up a home run in every single game. He has given up. Okay, there's one game he didn't get up. Three games this year out of all of his starts, and he started. He hasn't missed any time. So like we're looking at like 12 start sample. Three games this year he hasn't given up a home run. He has given up 8 multi-homer games. Okay. And if we're, you know, if we're going to go attack Nolasco, we can do it with, from both sides of the plate. He struggles with lefties to get them out, depressed K rate, you know, but the home runs come from the righties. The righties are smashing him. So for me, there's two guys that I really like in this spot. One is Jorge Bonifacio. The guy is hitting the ball really hard. He's $2,900 and he profiles extremely well against the fastball. Okay. That's by far Nolasco's worst pitch. And Moustakas, and look at the fucking numbers for these guys. They are smashing the baseball in their series in San Francisco. And like, you're thinking about like, wow, San Francisco, that's a terrible ballpark. They both had 12 and 25 fantasy points for Moustakas, and he played two of those games. Bonifacio played and had 19 and 31 fantasy points. I mean, these guys can hit. These guys can really, really, really hit. And I think that this is a sneaky spot for Moustakas and Bonifacio. And that's pretty much all I'm doing, by the way. I'm not really touching the they're not really doing the rest of it. I mean, maybe Sal Perez, because we know he can leave the yard, but he hasn't really done it in a while. In fact, let's see, when was the last time Sal Perez homered for us? He's 3,400. I guess at that price, I'd much rather have Alex Avila, although holy shit, yeah. I mean, Sal had two homers in that San Diego series. Not holy shit, but he had two homers in the San Diego series. You know, he's still hitting the ball. Two multi-hit games in Houston. Yeah, I mean, Sal is an elite catcher. He's pitching. He's catching really, really well. So I mean, it's an interesting stack. People are not playing the Royals on the road in LA. They're not. It's a huge leverage spot. So I like it. All right. That is it. That's the breakdown. A lot of complicated things. You know, I feel like I didn't really help people that much. I always talk these guys up and then I'm like, yeah, but by the way, my skepticism is pouring out of my pores here. But you know, here's what we do, right? What we do is we narrow it down. And what I'm consistently doing, guys, is I'm consistently using Vegas to back up my decision-making. Okay. I'm using Vegas to back up my decision-making. And you know, if I'm leaning towards a pitcher or I'm leaning towards a stack, I'll look at what Vegas has to say about it. And if Vegas agrees with me, if public bets agree with me, if that line isn't moving and people are hammering those, you know, teams to get the win, public money, whatever the case may be, then I'm going there. That's where I'm going. You know, and in this case, I think what I'm seeing is I'm seeing that Chris Sale's massive favorite and the Red Sox are projected for over 5 runs. That aligns with what I already know. So let's start the lineup there. And it's going to be Chris Sale at the top for me. Mitchie Moreland, 3,500. Xander Bogaerts, Andrew Benintendi. That's my four man. Okay. I have the support of the, I have the support of the Boston bats behind Chris Sale. heart of the order, probably 3, 4, 5 right there. I like that spot a lot. I think this is a good spot. Do I have Mookie? No, I would love to have Mookie. I don't think you have to have Pedroia, but I love, you know, would I love to have Mookie? Yeah, I wouldn't mind having Mookie, and I wouldn't mind having Jackie Bradley Jr. And in fact, maybe one of the lineups that I do, I will do a Mookie, Jackie Bradley Jr., you know, with Chris Sale, you know, and do that to just kind of get some variance in what I'm doing. Maybe I do a Chris Sale with Moreland, Bogaerts, Benintendi, and then I do a Chris Sale with Mookie, Jackie, and Pedroia. That's fun. That's kind of interesting. You know, you get both sides of the stack, and you know, you can mix and match too in other spots if you want. But Vegas is telling me that that's where I need to be. It's on Chris Sale and it's on Boston, and I trust those guys. And you know, that process is useful, by the way. That lines up. Now, that's a relatively expensive stack, and it's a relatively chalky spot. So there's a couple things that I had to do here. I had to look at, you know, my outfield to get some savings. I had to look at catcher to get some savings. And I'm going to have to look at second base to get some savings. You know, that's not ideal. That's not ideal. There's a lot. I really have a lot of, like, punting to do here. But I think one of the things that I like was, okay, I'm looking for guys who are going to be in the top of the order or going to be low owned to give me leverage. And the first thing that came to mind at third base and outfield was Bonifacio and Moustakas. 3,300 for Moustakas, 2,900 for Bonifacio. It's cheap. I could go with Yurko and Fowler. I like that too. I like Yurko and Fowler as a third base outfield pair. You know, as third base goes, I think the only other one that I could possibly get behind is probably Flores and Lagares. I like them, and they're cheap. That's really cheap. In fact, that would be a really fun little, move right there. Flores, Lagares, and let me see if this works. Hold on one second. Let me try this. And you know, yeah, it's not going to work. Well, it would work if I was able to get a min priced. So I could have a Flores, Cespedes, Lagares stack along with my Mets stack, but I have to find a punt catcher and a punt short, second baseman. But actually I kind of like that. That's kind of fun against, Gio, but you know, I don't mind Gio as well. So one of the thing that I was looking at was Bonifacio and Moustakas, and then I had to punt second base. And you know, if you're going down and you're going to punt, you want to find a guy who has power, you know. And I think Danny Espinosa is an interesting spot here. He left the yard again last night. He's a guy with limited power. He's a switch hitter. You know, he's at the bottom of the lineup, but he's been productive. And the Royals are pitching a guy who's, you know, going to be a limited pitch count. He's not a great pitcher. And if I'm going to pair him with anybody, it's going to be the catcher down there. So I went to Martin Maldonado, another cheap catcher who has power upside, you know. He hasn't been specifically amazing, but they do have the nice righty-lefty matchup there against this Strom character. So Maldonado, I have Moustakas at third. I have Bonifacio in the outfield. I have Maldonado and Espinosa at second and catcher. Little correlation play there. And then I needed one more outfielder, and I like Malik Smith as a punt kind of leadoff guy who on the road should get a lot of opportunity at 2,200 as a leadoff batter. It's complicated, you know. If you're building with Chris Sale, it is a challenge. It certainly is a challenge, and there's certainly, you know, some downside to Chris Sale. Now, let's say, for example, that we go with Jordan Montgomery, and I think he's going to be popular, no doubt about it. If I'm going to Jordan Montgomery, then I'm going to my Rocky stack immediately, and I'm immediately going to go Arenado. I'm going to go Desmond. I'm going to go, God, Charlie Blackman is just so damn expensive. I'm going to go LeMahieu unless he gets buried in the lineup. And I'm going to go Story because I hate having to figure out second base and shortstop. And then I have $2,900 left per position. I'm going to go pay down for catcher here. Let's say I always put, you know, $2,300 as a placeholder there. $2,300. I have a first baseman and an outfielder that I need. I think the correlation, I could have a really nice... Oh, here we go. This is interesting. I'm thinking maybe I go with Logan Morrison, Malik Smith, and I could probably, I think I can get, oh, well, and Colby Rasmus, right? Colby Rasmus in there as well. So Ray's stack within with a... Actually, yeah, I can get Corey Dickerson in there as well. So I could have, you know, Malik Smith, Corey Dickerson, and Logan Morrison. That's a really nice raise stack for leverage. I think that that's definitely in play. And again, you have to use Malik Smith because he's a leadoff batter and he's cheap salary relief right there. So that's interesting as well. You know, with Montgomery at the helm, you know, I could have also gone with Matt Carpenter and Dexter Fowler, and then taken another outfielder. You know, relatively inexpensive outfielder would have worked there. That would have been an interesting spot. First base would have also been interesting to go with a guy like, you know, we could go back to Mitch. I could go back to Mitch Moreland. I could go to I could go with Eric Thames. Eric Thames and maybe, you know, Hernan Perez or something like that. So, I mean, there's a lot of options here. And obviously a guy like Jordan Montgomery is going to lend you a ton of salary flexibility here. In fact, you could probably figure out, let me see if I can figure this out. I think I can do my Mitch Moreland, and then my, three man from, the, yeah, this works really well. You can do a... yeah, if you punt catcher, you can go Red Sox and Rockies. And you can get Moreland, Bogarts, Benintendi, and Bradley, along with LeMahieu, Arenado, and Desmond, the three righties right there, with Jordan Montgomery at the top, and then you have the punt catcher. Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty interesting way to do it. Pretty interesting way to do it. Certainly is not a bad idea. And in fact, if I went down to my boy, Jeff Hoffman, my boy, my man, and I got the bats to back him up, then I could go up to, Mookie, and still have money for catcher. So, I mean, man, I may do this. Four-man Red Sox, Moreland, Bogarts, Benintendi, Betts, with Desmond, LeMahieu, Arenado in cores with Jeff Hoffman. My man, Jeff Hoffman, riding the bull, taking the risk, pitching in cores. I mean, even in that start he started against Los Angeles in cores, who's way better against right-handed pitching, he still had 37 fantasy points. He got the win. 8 strikeouts. He hasn't had a start where he's had less than 7 strikeouts. This guy is fucking filthy. Jeff Hoffman, baby. Let's go. Let's go, Jeff Hoffman. But that's it. Okay. All right. That's enough for me. I talk way too much. Patreon.com/lineuplogic. Good luck in your contest. Love you guys. I will see you mañana.